Okay, let's roll. Today is May 30th, 2016, and everyone swore to me they're going to be here this week and next week. Zomin Zen. We had a very exciting Friday, and it will show up later with a surprise I brought. I gave a special class. We had a very nice crowd, and something very special happened that I will explain later. Coming back to some of the concepts we have expressed in class here. So if you recall, last week I raised the issue, we raised it I believe 2 weeks ago already, with the Chafetz Chaim running to the window every morning. And how do we raise children with this thought, you know, any moment Mashiach can be here, and yet we wake up and we go to sleep, Mashiach is not here. So I quoted David Hartman. I told the story of Duvi at that time. Who would ever believe what would become of David Hartman? But at that time, he was one of the stalwarts of the yeshiva, and everyone looked up to him. And I was particularly, particularly close with Duvi. And wow. So he came back from Boston. He had been there for Rosh Hashanah. And he was telling us that the Rav blew shofar with the stopwatch. We established last week from the Brookline people here. Doesn't mean a stopwatch. What it means, he looked at his watch to stop at the end of a few, whatever he felt was the shear. So I asked Duvi, does the Torah require us to blow shofar this way? After all, lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharei. So Duvi said, no, but in every generation we have to have someone who reaches this level and sets the ultimate example. And I said the same thing with the Chafetz Chaim. It doesn't mean we all have to run to the window every morning as Mashiach here. But at least we know there's a Chafetz Chaim in the generation. So my dear student, Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein, wrote to me that Rabbi Lichtenstein always used the watch to count the seconds. And made up the attached sheet, and I see here he gives me a whole structure of tchiyot on Rosh Hashanah. And when Rabbi Grinstein was in the rabbi in Halifax, Nova Scotia, I believe it is, he in Canada, he also blew that way. So I just want to answer. Where did you see it too? And also,
the Rav would stand there with a stopwatch.
Which Rav? Which Rav?
Rav
Berkowitz. So I just have to. So I have to tell you that I
didn't like his. Okay. I went longer.
No. Besides, I have to tell you, I was one Rosh Hashanah, I davened in Lakewood, and I'm pretty certain that there was no watch being used. Rav Aaron Cutler, we're talking about. I remember before Rosh Hashanah, they covered the ceiling with fabric. It had something to do with the kolot bouncing. I don't know exactly, but I remember everyone. Can you explain it?
The echo. They didn't want to have an echo.
They didn't want to have an echo. All right.
You have to hear the kol, not the echo.
Morty's wife, his father-in-law was the Talmud of Rav Aaron, and yet Slutz. Kol HaKavod. I remember everyone was so impressed. Then a year later, or 2 years later, I was in New York, and I didn't want to daven with Balapatam. I wanted, you know, after davening in Lakewood, you wanted a real davening. So the Mashkiach, Rav Yaakov Moshe Kohen Lesson, made a special minyan for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur with some Bernard Revel. Those of you who recall the little structure that was Bernard Revel Graduate School, it doesn't exist anymore. The wooden hut that was built after World War II with government money. So there, too, I can tell you absolutely no one used the stopwatch. So I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of nowadays, I once gave a whole drush in America a number of times, with the, they give out before Pesach, you have like a little mat. And on that mat, the size of the matzah, the size of the marah. And my dear students, this brings me back to my classmates, maybe his magnum opus that can be understood. Because when you talk about the Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaimke Soloveitchik, you're talking about a genius of geniuses. Of course, he's an interesting individual beyond that. But Chaim, his masterpieces, Yeinam. But Yeinam, I'll be honest, 10 people in the world, understand it. I'm one of them. Perhaps, Alan, you understand it. You have to have a feeling for Chochmat Yisrael, too. It's not just Lamdanut there. You understand? It's the ultimate gold standard for what Chochmat Yisrael can achieve. He goes way beyond. If you compare Goyshel Shabbat, his Rebbe's masterpiece, Professor Yaakov Katzwein, who so well, Chaim is way beyond anyone. But the magnum opus that is understandable knew what I'm referring to. Rupture and reconstruction. Isn't this exactly what Chaim says? And we never had to have a shear. We knew how much matzah to eat. We saw our father eat, our grandfather, our great-grandfather. We knew how long a tkiah has to be. It's unbelievable. But a new generation came along, and there's no longer the seeing with our own eyes. What did Chaim come up with? The new word, the mimetic tradition. You can't mimic anyone, so you didn't see. And I grew up in a wilderness, the Bronx. All right, my grandfather, the Zayda that lived with us, it never was Michal Shabbos in America, I told you. He didn't speak any Russian, didn't speak any English. I once asked him, how could it be you reached America at 15 and you never spoke a word, or you don't speak Russian? So he said all we had to do in Russia was curse them and say Dan Yet and a few good curse words, which came, I told you, came very handy for me in Russia, particularly in Riga. You have no idea how, and then in the Israeli army too, I understood what was going on due to my Zayda. But my other grandfather, who learned in Volozhin and can quote Gemaras, and also came to America at 15, I hope he went to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I think he went Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and I'm sure he did. And now, only 100 years later, do I understand what my grandmother suffered in America, who she came from. She was Rabbi Revel's cousin. That's my whole yichus. Comes down through that grandmother. But I didn't see when, what, where, rupture and reconstruction. But nevertheless, I still, Rabbi Grunstein, even though you're telling me Baruch Lichtenstein did it this already, and I see a formal sheet, so I still stand on the fact, Halavai, we shouldn't need charts and everything should work. I remember what the shear is and etc. This is the way Jews have lived from time immemorial. But I accept Rabbi Grunstein's emendation with graciousness. I also want to mention Rabbi Grunstein had shofar blown in Sal and Shmon Esrei, and he worked out a whole system with the Baal Tokeya that he would signal him if he blew enough or if he has to re-blow. So I want you to know that in Maplewood, I had a wonderful Baal Tokeya, one of the first Shomer Shabbos to move out to Maplewood as a result of our shul, was a Yonah Manz. Yonah Levrach was a YU graduate. He died young. His father lived to 100 or so. I taught his son in this kollel years later. And Jonah died, I don't think he made 60. And Yonah Manz, wonderful. There were two Jonah Manz, they were cousins, but he was the one who died young. I think he had a PhD in physics. He was involved in the 60s. He traveled, did a lot for armament, and a very wonderful individual. Wonderful Baal Tokeya, Baal Korei. So I had him blow. I would signal him when I finished, Malkia, the Zichrona, Shofra, right, that's the order. So why did I blow in the Salon Shmesrei? Why do you come up with this? Again, we're going back to, you can give a shir and definitely Tkufat HaGoinim and all that went on in the Tkufat HaGoinim. All right, you can talk about it indefinitely. But why nowadays to blow in the Salish for an Esrei in Maplewood, New Jersey, where I don't think in the early years I didn't have a minyan Shomer Shabbos, not on Shabbos, not on Rosh Hashanah, and not on Yom Kippur. Obviously, I had a big crowd, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, they come out of the woodworks. But why? Very simple. The Shmona Esrei of Musaf is the longest Shmona Esrei in the world. It's a textbook unto itself. When people say to me, how do I know about Jewish history? I tell them, learn the Shmona Esrei of Musaf. When they say, how do I know Hashkafa? Learn the Shmona Esrei of Musaf. How do I know how to be a Jew? I can use the Shmona Esrei of Musaf as a textbook to for Gerim, to learn what Yiddishkeit is. But the problem is, it took me very long. So I didn't want the audience to finish 20 minutes before me and talk and gossip and the rabbis davening too long. by blowing in the solid Shmonesri, he turned it into a show. And like the people, you know, they were so impressed. You got to remember this. I once gave a whole drush at that. When we do crazy things in Yiddishkeit, it attracts attention. So you can, I didn't use this as an example for obvious reasons. But believe me, when you hit shiners on Hoshana Rabba, you know, people go berserk. Everyone turns out. It's different. It's unique. What's meant us? People of Moshe Nefesh, I remember ladies would come and buy shiners like their whole life depended upon it. I have to tell you, I don't want to be cynical, but you can be a very good Jew if you happen to skip shiners. You understand? 1 year, we're not in the face of Mikdash, we're not. But it's terrific, the parade. So I have to be Moidal Emet. I wonder why Rabbi Grinstein blew in the Silas Menesrei. But that's the reason I blew. Okay, number one. Number two. If you recall yesterday, I spoke about the great news that my dear friend, the president of Russia, the man who is president of the only other country a Jew is allowed to live in today, either you live in Israel or you live in Russia. There's no two ways about it. It's the only Western country that observes the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. And even though the Yomo will tell us he kills a few Jews, including his relatives in the Ukraine, Yomo is absolutely wrong because they have a din of Morei B'malchut. So don't tell me that he's killing people. Morei B'malchut. But he's returning the tank. The first name I stumbled on yesterday, remember I told you the Zachariah Bauman was in that tank? Yehuda Katz. It dawned upon me sitting in Terem, waiting after the blood test and waiting for this test, and then the doctor has to see you. It hit me. Not I said Yaakov yesterday. Yaakov Katz was a Chavah Knesset from Agudat Yisrael years ago. But it's Yehuda Katz. The third person, of course, is Tzvika Feldman, and he was not in that tank to the best of my memory. But the newspapers today are already saying just what I said in class, that a lot of research will be done on what's in the tank. It may give us a clue if there's blood in the tank, etc., etc. It may give us a clue to what happened. I mean, I have my own theory, but it's not for now, and because of what I know, and I have a security clause, I'm not allowed to talk. I have my own theory, but let's leave that for the time being. Maybe in 100 or 200 years, we can come back to it.
Is there anybody from that family alive,
Baumel? I spoke with him. Miriam Baumel is alive. Yona is gone. Miriam's alive. His brother's alive.
She refuses to admit that he's dead.
She won't have to do anything. Let's see what the evidence proves. It's worse than you think, because I try to convince Yona. I have my reasons, and I couldn't convince him. And it's a shame, because had I succeeded in convincing him, B'chayav, we could have built a nice memorial to the three boys. Today, it's already ancient history, and very few people know what's going on. In all three families, parents died. There may be one parent, at most, in each family alive. If you want it to be more tangible, the Katz boy is of Hungarian origins. He was related to someone you know, Sue Lieberman, Susan Lieberman, Susan Brown Lieberman. You know what I'm talking about, Barry Liebman's wife. She is Hungarian, and the Katz and her family, the Brown family, were cousins. So there's a relationship there. In the Feldman family, it's interesting, his sister... I hope I have the facts right. If I'm off, it doesn't matter, but essentially I have the story right. They were traditional. They were survivors, his parents. His sister married an English gentleman who came in Aliyah, and they became totally observant. But nevertheless, we stand where we stand. A sad part of the story here is that Yehuda Katz's father went to Rav Eliyahu, and he asked Rav Eliyahu, is my son alive or not? No, so here you get involved already when I spoke about on the Friday with Hasidus. So Rav Eliyahu said he's learning Gemara. So what does it mean he's learning Gemara? He's learning Gemara. It could be he's learning the Yonam Emes and the Lamala and the Beif Medrash Shalmala. It was a very bad answer. And he took it to mean that he's still alive. That played out in the Supreme Court. If you followed, they wanted to get... I was summoned. I was in America. They wanted me to come to the Supreme Court and testify. I was in America. When I got back, it was over. Anyway, the Supreme Court, the army wanted to declare them dead on the basis of research that I was heavily involved with. The Katz family went to the Supreme Court. And they quoted Rav Eliyahu, etc. And the Supreme Court ruled, you know, nothing has really changed in all the years that went by. If the army didn't declare them dead at the end of a year or 2 years, why should we declare them dead now? So those three boys technically remain missing in action. And it has many implications. They still get a salary from the army. Their names are not monuments. There's no closure. It remains an open wound. But all right, let's hope, Halavai, they should find proof that will bring closure and satisfy the Supreme Court, which Alan rules our country, just the way, to a certain degree, the Supreme Court rules the United States. All right, now, before I begin, I just want to check, okay. On a very sad note, I got notification this morning that Dr. Sheldon Sokol died. It's from Richard Joel, and I want to say a few words about Sheldon Sokol, who was my classmate. I think he was a year older, graduated a year ahead of me, college, but we were together in the same Sheyurim. And you don't know what a debt we owe Sheldon Sokol. He was very tight. He kept screws on the yeshiva's money. I used to joke around that here in Grist you can't spend a cent even for toilet tissue without getting an okay from the New York office. Look what happened after he stepped down and the new administration came in. So number one, we owe him a tremendous thanks. He kept the yeshiva together. He was the one who worked out the deal with the banks when yeshiva almost went bankrupt, when Rabbi Lam took over. This was Sheldon Sokol, who had this financial genius. But I want to tell you why I love Sheldon Sokol. And I nimodah l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I had enough seichel to say this in public and to hundreds of people in the audience, with Sheldon among them, 2 years ago when yeshiva honored me. And I told the following story about Sheldon Sokol. He came over afterwards. He was crying. He thanked me. But let me tell you a story I know not from him. I know from Manny Holzer, Zichrono Levracha. Manny, as you recall, was the liaison between the OU and the RCA. Manny was he was the czar of Kashrut. Today, Menachem Ganak is the czar of Kashrut. Manny was in his time. So we heard a story with YU. I can't go into details. A mashgiach who got caught with a money problem. Anyway, people had mercy on him and brought him to YU. And he was the mashgiach in the kitchen. And something went wrong. Could you imagine in the YU kitchen there's a problem of kashrut? So then there was a big meeting. What do we do? And at that meeting, the OU attended and the YU people... And Sheldon Sokol got up, and I quote, this is what Manny Holzer told me, he said, "I don't care how much money it costs. Yeshiva University cannot have any problems of kashrut and any bidyevids in its kitchens. And I propose that we go under the OU with all our facilities, even if it is close to a seven-figure hashgacha. We can't afford to do otherwise." And because of Sheldon Sokol, it was unanimous, and all the yeshiva cafeterias, lunchrooms, whatever food they serve, Einstein, uptown, downtown, midtown, everything is under OU supervision. And I need not tell you what OU supervision is. So kol hakavod to Sheldon Sokol, may his memory be a blessing. To me, he's a young man yet. To some of you, maybe if I say someone died at 79, let's say 78, 79, you think, oh, he achieved old age. At my age, if he died at that age, he's a babe in the woods yet. So I recall his memory with awe and with fondness. He was a classmate. He was a serious kid, even as a student. You knew that this guy is not going to cheat. He's not going to rob. He was honest. Sheldon Sokol was honest. He was unique. There were no shtick with him. There was nothing underground. What's going on in Borough Park today, if you know, with the police already, one police officer committed suicide. God knows where this would end. And the New York Times, they're sitting around. They never had more joy in their lives to have stories like this. So Sheldon, you knew, could never be part of a charade like that. Kol hakavod lo. And he left wonderful children. I taught members of his family. Okay, come back to the Rebbe, come back to Chabad, the Messianic issue, and I quoted, it's a very, the quotes, is he Mashiach, isn't he Mashiach, could he be, how many, what percentage believes it, what percentage doesn't believe it, fine. And that famous talk, what was it, 1991, I believe, we ended off the class last week, 91, that famous talk, where the Rebbe said, I've done what I can, now it's up to you. I have not succeeded. He threw down the gauntlet to his Hasidim. And that's a sad chapter in the Rebbe's life. Here he is, over 90. When someone turns 90, I know, I told you in my shul, my minion in the morning, we have all ages, but we have sometimes a lot of teenagers come in, kids who are going on hikes, if there's a marathon, Yom Ha'atzmaut, people are up all night, so we have all types. We don't only have, then there are middle-aged people who work and want to leave early, have big businesses, people work for the government. There's one guy when he comes in, he's a colonel in the army, he's a judge. So you know he has a big, he's sitting already in judgment that day, got a full day of work ahead of him. So we do have a handful of people in their 80s. So one of the old timers turned 90. So everyone said, Bench Tishim, he's 90 years old. I look, you're in your 80s, what's the big deal? But you see, 90 is 90, 80 is young, 90 is old. And the Rebbe here is turning 90, frustrated, upset. And we have to understand Hasidim, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. The Rebbe understand what he had achieved, but still Mashiach is not here. So I have to thank a young lady who's coming in Aliyah, Eliana, sent me and I have to thank Danny. Is Danny here? I don't see him. He printed out everything for me. So she made a comparison here to President Roosevelt, and probably it means Teddy Roosevelt. And when he speaks about winning the Wild West, the great epic, but he's telling the youngsters, we've done what we can. Now you gotta carry on and complete the work that we have done. So you'll see that there it is, the same concept like the Rebbe. I've done what I can, now it's up to you. Okay, 2 weeks later, there was a Fabrengen, or 2 days later, Shabbos afternoon, and a big crowd was there. And this wasn't just in the Beis Medrash, this already was a planned talk, and suddenly a chassid stood up and he couldn't control himself and he shouted out that the Rebbe should declare himself Mashiach, Tzadik Geise v'Kadosh Baruch Hu Mekayem. And he threw this challenge to the Rebbe. And you know, this is Hasidus. Everyone, they showed on the website I saw this morning, on all the Mamshel Charedim, that there's a Rebbe sitting in Meiron, and everyone has sent him a kvittel, and he's sitting in Meiron all day reading the kvittlach. All right, and you know, each one, this one is asking for refuah shleima, this one is asking for a zivik, this one is asking nachat from children, grandchildren, Could you picture sitting all day? I mean, this is a Rebbe. This is a Rebbe, Kol HaKavod. All right, I would sit in Meiron. I'd be learning all day if I'm already in Meiron. And what can I tell you? The Rashbi's Kevin, Nachman Lernin. So he shouts, we asked the Rebbe to decree that Mashiach should come. The Rebbe turns to the Chassid and didn't ignore him. Generally speaking, people shouted out something to the Rebbe. Everyone's a Chacham Belaila. The Rebbe went on. The Rebbe turned to him and they quote English translation, "I know what my work is. Don't give me new assignments. I already said what work you have to do." And then the Rebbe went in and it's the famous talk he gave, "What do you have to do?" When he called upon the people, intensifying their learning.
When did this incident take place?
The Shabbos, two days after the Rebbe raised his hands and said, "It's up to you, I've done the most." And to do the mitzvah and to give charity and to learn Torah and to outreach. Now, something very interesting happened here, which we have to understand against the Israeli background. And this is just historic. If you don't have the historic background, you don't realize what happens next. And the background is very simple. We Jews, unfortunately, love to fight. I think I told you on my 75th birthday, I don't celebrate publicly. I'm an old-fashioned Jew and I disagree with the Rambam. I believe there is an Ayin Hara. So I don't want to celebrate, but I wanted to do something unique. So it turned out, mamish, on my 75th birthday, Bo Bayom, I gave a talk at YU in the Baron Kutla, and I had to force it upon them. I couldn't get over it that no one knows who Baron Kutla was, what he did. So I give it was the Midrashia Yom Rishon, they call it, if I'm correct. And I give this talk, a big, big crowd, and it's a powerful talk. Maybe I spoke an hour and a half. So I was told afterwards on one of the blogs, I don't know how computer conscious I was at the time, it's a number of, I knew already the computer, it's not that many years ago. So I see people complimenting me. Could you imagine a YU Rebbe spoke for an hour and a half on the Baron Kutler and didn't say one negative word? I said, "Can you understand? There's morons. Rebbe Shalalem. I'm going to say, I mean, all right, I admit I don't live the way Rabaron Cutler envisioned. Morty Carradine and his father-in-law went off the path, if you're going to view it that. I mean, right or wrong. But we all right, we have our own path, our own shita. But Rabaron Cutler, so you all know, many people have complimented me recently. Rebbe, how can you teach something you don't believe? It's amazing. I can teach Rabbi Nasha Klein's viewpoint. This is his, I don't entirely agree, but you have to understand it. And you know my vart, I said it 1,000,001 times. If any sheet that worked out 100%, 99%, I'd be the first one to line up. I take a look at the tragedies going on today. Forget about Borough Park, look at you. You don't know what's going on with this Maklev. You don't start to comprehend, because I know the family. This is a family, mishpacha mushreshet. I know relatives of the family. His cousin is in the Knesset. His great-great uncle was the Ramatkal. I mean, his great-great uncle and aunt or grandparents were killed. Great-great-great-grand were killed in 29 by the Arabs. This is Maklev. They relate to Heshla. They relate to this one. They relate to that one. But Rebbeinu Shalom, What goes on? But Gedolei Yisrael, we don't have to be negative. No one has a solution. And what? In the Tzioni Dati country, everything is fine and beautiful. And look what's going on. You're not familiar. Remember I showed you an article in Makori Shon. I spoke about it. How many Talmidim of Rabarin wound up in David Hartman's place. So you don't know what a debate is going on now in Makor Rishon. Oh, it's not fair to say that it was only one particular class, and you know. But every hashkafa, we're open. We're living in two worlds. No one has the perfect answer.
Somebody from their world, getting give a talk about the rope for an hour and a half.
Say that. Saying, so people said that. People said that. We're very proud of our Rav Rak Tefit, but would they do it? I don't have to look at them. I have to look up. And I have
like
to look
like
up.
Every circle, there will be a certain percentage of people who are more thoughtful and
I hope, all right, Peseda, I agree,
and
I agree.
And you're Rabbi one Kevin, of the ones Rabbi in the circle.
Alex, I hope you're right, believe
Rabbi
me.
Aaron Lichtenstein himself wrote in one of his English Sfarim, I think the first one, that you know, he talked about how he, you know, and his circle revere the gedolim of the Haredi world. However, the favor is not returned.
Right. Well, I'm beside that we're all in the same boat. Anyway, why am I telling you this? Because in Eretz Yisrael in the late 80s into the early 90s, there was a tremendous, tremendous split with tremendous Akmas Nefesh. And this, of course, is Rav Shach, the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, who you know I had quite a close relationship with his family. And even Rav Shach, he knew enough to put me in the Cheirim when he put the Michalar in the Cheirim. And it was an interesting Cheirim and all that went on. That was in the 70s. But all right, to put Rakevet in the Cheirim or Etzionid Dati, that's no big deal. But he went after the Lubavitch and the Hasidim in general, and Lubavitch. Well, not in Cheirim there with the Darshanut. Besides that, we dealt with that. Forget about that. That's minorly.
I'm just minorly. I heard Talmidim of the Rav quote Rav Shach in glowing terms. It's unfathomable.
You heard me quote in glowing terms with his money, with the kids from Tzvat. I love it. But anyway, relax. But I can tell you this. The last time Agudat Yisrael held a convention was 1980, the last Knesiyah Gedolah. There will never be, in my lifetime and in your lifetime, I hate to say it, there will never be a Knesiyah Gedolah again, because the hatred, the animosity is so great that they can't sit together. So I made up my mind, I have to get to that convention. I've come in Aliyah, I'm living in Israel at the time. I was living 11 years, 12 years. I got to get to this Knesiyah Gedolah. How am I going to get there? 100 Gerich Chassidim wanted it. 1,000 Gerich Chassidim wanted it. Couldn't get him. Mark, I did a terrible thing. Protexia. I got in touch with my cousin, my good friend Sal Schultz, and I told him, get in touch with your cousin, who's the world executive director of Agudat Yisrael. Get me in to the convention. And he got me in as a reporter for Jewish Life. Jewish Life still existed. I had, I wrote Katav. And I played the role. Vic was I. No wonder I could make a great spy. I played the role. Ani kame America. No, ani lo. I don't understand Yiddish or Ivrit too well. Only English. Because of that, the people around me spoke freely. Well, who was running the show? Who is running the show? The Gera Sadranim. These guys were 6'6 and 6'6 wide. You did not start up with them. So here they are seating you. See, and you know, with COVID. And as an American, and definitely not getting a shtickl covered. Yeah, based on Americana, he's an American. He's making him a little covered. Mr. Rothkopf, my Rothkopf, Zebiseda, it's okay where you're sitting? Good. And then Rav Shach walked in. Natan, you will never get out of me the words that these Gera Hasidim said to each other. Okay? I'll only hint, there's a figure in a different religion known as Yud something. Yud. Sarayim Kukumen. He came in now. At that moment, if you know the Gemara in Baba Kama, I knew that Agudat Yisrael is finished. And Rav Shach split it. You wound up with 3 Agudat Yisrael. Agudat Yisrael, Degel HaTorah, and Shas. And in the late 80s, they actually ran separate tickets, the Hasidim versus the Mitnagdim. So there was a tremendous split, enmity. All the major Hasidiyot in the world came out supporting the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's very fascinating. Ger, Belz, Skver, Vishnitz, Kloisenberg. And when the Rebbe said we have to be mitchazek in learning Torah, Shmirat Shabbos, mitzvot, davening, tzedakah, outreach, all the Hasidiyot, the Rebbeim issued statements that the Rebbe was right. And they cooperated. It was a sight to see. So you take it at surface value, fine. Hasidim are joining Hasidim. But it was much deeper than that. It was a slap in the face to the Degel HaTorah world. Now, all of you know that this schism continues until today. It's in the news daily, morning and night. There are so many different Haredi newspapers today that even if Vic read Hebrew as well as he read English, he does not have enough time on a Monday, a normal Monday, to read all those Haredi different papers. How they can support all these papers is beyond me. But when it comes to elections, they do unite with the United Torah Front, I think it's called in English. UTJ, United Torah Judaism, thank you. I think in Hebrew they use the word Pseida. UTJ, why do they unite? Because in a democracy, the Knesset has power unless the Supreme Court overrules them. It should be just the opposite, but right now that's the way it is. And you have the Achuz Hasima. You have to reach a certain level to get into the Knesset. What is it at today? 3%, 4% already, 3.5%, 4%. 4 seats?
Yes.
4 seats to get. I remember it used to be four seats.
Because in the latest poll, they show the UTJ getting 10 and Shas Bekoshi getting 4, just making the.
Yes, my God. But I want to tell you what I learned long ago. Anything can happen from now until the elections. So, who knows? Netanyahu's wife can be in jail. You read the papers. She used the electrician upstate and downstate. What goes on here? But be it as it may, it's a fascinating chapter. The Rebbe, when he said, you have to do, every chassid in the world turned around. You have to join with the Rebbe. Now, events were happening that strengthened the Rebbe's image. He's turning 90. The man has had unbelievable impact. But not only that, the world events that have happened have, it's like the Rebbe is a prophet. How do you interpret it? You all know my vort. I'm very hesitant to prophesy the future. Prophesying what happened in the past is hard enough for an honest historian. But you see, with the Rebbe, you had at this time the Iraq War. And here they're shooting in missiles. I mean, I lived through this. I wore a gas mask. I have a picture of myself studying Gemara the kids took with a gas mask on. We could see the Patriot missiles going up in the air from our terrace, the Mirpeset. I was teaching on a collegiate level yet. Midreshet Moriah. I was teaching in the Kollel in Midreshet Moriah. I'm still in Midreshet Moriah. All the girls left. Everyone ran home. And the Rebbe said, stay put. No harm will happen to you. And when you look back, we had no real defense. Giddy, these missiles were flying. And you know how many people were killed as a direct result of the missiles? One person. You know who this person was? A Panovich graduate who every Shabbos would drive his motorcycle into the Panovich campus to tell you what he thought of Panovich and the education he received. He was the only one killed. It's unbelievable. There were deaths, I have to tell you, from I had a chavra, a YU graduate who had survived the Holocaust. When the first sirens went off, he had a heart attack. And he said in the hospital, it reminded him of what went on in World War II. He couldn't take it and he died a few days later, never recovered from the heart attack. There were a few, there was another woman, an elderly woman, but a direct missile hit only. No, what does the Rebbe look like? What does the Rebbe look like? He said, stay put, no harm. Would you have the guts to talk like that? Not only that, right at the end of the Rebbe's life, the gates of the Soviet Union opened. No, who could believe this? And the Rebbe said time and again that communism will fall. And with the gates of the Soviet Union opening, you see, from Jews coming out, all right, there were two levels of from Jews. One, the Balei Tshuva, the Tzionim Datiyim, who had been in refusal, the people, a guy named Rakefet and a guy named Rubin were involved with. And believe me, if this would be the 1980s, I wouldn't let the Watsons off the hook. But I have to, you know, certain things you have to have. You have to be a citizen. You have to have done army if you came at the right age. But if you came older, that's no longer. And then you can't have any police record. They check you out very thoroughly. I can tell you stories and stories of people I proposed. And what I went through when I came back to the hidden area in Tel Aviv, and my the boss would say to me, "Harav Rakefet, Yisach Chavayim, Yesh Lecha, Tireh," and he would throw the shin bet report at me. What the heck they found out about this guy? It's a story unto itself. And what? And then I say to him, "Mani Agidla, what do I say to him?" He says, "Zol Tambaya Shelcha, it's your present." I said, "Tareli Shuv." I looked at then. I figured out Baruch Hashem, the Gemara Cup works. Boy, did I handle it well. All right, so I'm in Zayin Gesund. But there were other Jews that came out of Russia, Jews who never gave up Yirat Shemayim, Torah, lifestyle, risked their lives, relatives deported, murdered. The Rebbe's own father is an example. And these people, the word went out that despite all the communism and Stalin and all the power in their hands, these Jews remain from because of the Rebbe. And you understand, it took on tremendous proportions. And then, of course, the Rebbe, Mashiach, we want Mashiach, people yelling, the intensity. And there's one final story that takes place before the Rebbe is incapacitated. It's not about the Rebbe, but it's about the Shluchat. The Shluchat already are a powerful organization, the women of Lubavitch. And one Saturday night, January 4th, 1992, they have a Malava Malka, a public Malava Malka, Matzai Shabbos, Chevreshaft, friendship, Ishet Regeyu Chazek. The Rebbe didn't attend the Malava Malka, but there were many prominent Chabad speakers, including the most prominent then, he should live and be well. He today is considered the elder of Chabad, Reb Yoel Kahn. Kahn, it's pronounced. Reb Yoel Kahn. Reb Yoel Kahn, as you all know, he was one of the people they mentioned as a candidate when the Rebbe died. This is a person with a photographic memory, knows Kol HaTorah Kula. He's very insightful, very original. He was the Choseh. You know what the Choseh means? When the Rebbe would speak on Shabbos, after Shabbos he would repeat what the Rebbe said word by word. He would smile when the Rebbe smiled, grimace when the Rebbe grimaced. Tears would be in his eyes when the Rebbe had tears in his eyes. He was unbelievable. And they would write it down. They would record it and write it down. That's how we have all these sichot that were given on Shabbos. You have them because of the Choseh. So at that Malava Malka, Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who was the key speaker, he writes called the Chozer, the last 40 years, he had memorized the Rebbe Shabbos talks, whatever I told you was written here. And in his speech, Rabbi Yoel told of a Jew who rented an inn from his Polish landlord for 30 rubles a year. Once he sent his son to pay the rent. On his return, the young man triumphantly announced the bargain he had arranged. Instead of 1 year for 30 rubles, 3 years for 50 rubles. Wow. Fool, his father shouted. The Mashiach is coming next year. Why did you make such a long-term contract? And you see, you're troubled, Josh, right? How do you understand? Exactly. The Hasidim understood. They believed Messiah didn't come to Poland. They knew that they must not fear being disappointed. They must not mind that their mystical ideas are often mocked as being naive. From a Hasidic perspective, maintaining devout faith is more significant than having a sense of what the Western secular world terms reality. You see, the kid is westernized already. I'm going, he went to Sison's business school. He doesn't want to be a dentist. He's a businessman. He's happy as can be. 30 ruble would be 90 ruble. What a bargain he got. Almost 50% off. But the father, you know, we got to believe. All right, we don't want to be disappointed. We know Mashiach is not here, but we have to believe. Gentlemen, we have arrived. Gentlemen and ladies, and ladies that are listening. Okay. We have arrived. We won't finish this week. But before we go further, I want to speak a little bit about the miracle. Alex threw me into a glass house, corralled me into giving a special shiur on Friday. I had a lot of fun Friday. I pulled the wool over their eyes. The room was mobbed. But Alex doesn't know how much Friday meant to me. And you don't even know why, Alex. Because it's 35 years since the first time Malka and I entered communist Russia. If anyone would have tapped me on the shoulder, and you don't know, I don't want to sound like a big shot to you. You don't know how fearful and frightened we are. Yitz, when you went in with Judy, were you frightened or not?
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Believe
it's
me.
It's not Disney World.
The person who spoke with me a lot, Tzvi Groner, Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi Professor, Tzvi Groner, you know the name. It's Label's nephew, my best friend. Tzvi, when he would talk about his first entry, was still shaking. Years later. Shaking. I don't shake. But I was frightened stiff. Someone would have tapped me on the shoulders. What the heck we went through. Arnie, you should know, one day you're going to give a shiur, and there are going to be three young people sitting there, who all were born in Russia. Anna, B'nai Torah, 1,000%. This past Friday, I had a mezuman of three young men born and bred in Russia who were listening to Aaron Rekefet bring the Rav back to life in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. It's the first time I had three. You know two. This gentleman, Avram Rachman, the fellow, someone came over to me last Monday from the faculty of Shamula, Rabbi Shamula, and said, my good friend tells me he's listened to over 500 Yeshurim, he wants to meet you. I looked at him, I said, I don't meet Al, how can I die? I'm not a Rebbe. I talk to students. I can't talk to outsiders. I don't know them. I won't pass them for someone else. There's a lot of subjectivity in halakha. I'm giving a talk like that in America. I have a fabulous, have a terrific way to start the talk. But you know what? I'm giving you shiur Friday. Let him come Friday. No one works Friday. He came. Came over to me after shiur. He was inspired. Graduate of Harvard, graduate of Stanford, very successful in Israel, every degree you could imagine. English makes Yitzchak and I look like immigrants to hear his English. Wow. And then he tells me, guess where he was born and raised? In Russia. Came to America, I think he said 14 years. Gentlemen, one day, maybe they'll have a museum on the Russian story, I'll contribute this hat. When I went into Russia the first time, so I needed a warm hat. I inherited this from my father. My father was gone when I was saying Kaddish that year. So this was his hat when he started working in the post office in the Depression. The American government, the American government bought hats from the Royal Mounties in Canada. These hats were made for them. So my father always used to show the hat. This was my hat that I wore, and how warm it is, and it's really warm. But this hat has something very unique. My wife sewed a pocket into it. Do you know why it has a pocket? Your passports, money, and visa went into this pocket. Of course, if you left it in your hotel room, the KGB informed you, it's lost, it's gone. You have to go to the police station. They ground you, so you can't run around and visit and do bad things like teach Torah to Jews. So you're instructed. Now the problem, what do you do Shabbos? This is more than ten tefachim, makom haptua. Some said, no, put it in your pocket, it's gimel tefachim, lavud. But that's not so good because it gets bent and it's very uncomfortable and you have to do a lot of walking. This was the best solution. So here you see a raw, mounty Canadian hat that was worn in New York that then goes to Israel, then goes to Russia, and it has a Shabbos pocket in the hat. And I want to tell you that Yomo was gracious enough to put up $99,000 linked to the shekel that the Rebbe should show the hat. It is now on the IO list. And the night that Yomo gets married, I rip the IOU up.
It's like you lavish a hat.
It's a unique, exact. You hit the nail on the head. You need a Rebbish a hat with a red Bekisha, communist Bekisha. You wouldn't believe how many Hasidim I would have. Yeah?
Before you tell me I'm suffering from sulfonitis, you told us that you would today talk about the Rebbe that he himself think that he was.
We'll come to that, but did he really think? You'll see what I have, but let me do it my way. Gentlemen, unfortunately, none of us live forever. If I needed an example, I got it last night. I drove home from here, I said goodnight to Vic. I barely had the energy to crawl upstairs. Thank God we have an elevator. I ate, davened Mariv, and while I'm davening Mariv, I feel my hand feels like it's a balloon, my elbow. All right. My wife says, you got to go to Terem. Call my daughter, which Terem? God gives strength. I drove. I looked for Vic. He lives in Mamish around the corner. Maybe I made a shidduch between you. You'll meet a nice young American. It's just wonderful to see what they're contributing to the country. He's a YU graduate, the doctor, Dr. Goldstein, Dov Goldstein. YU graduate. His father, Kupferman, was my student BMT. So you look around you, people are hobbling in with this illness, that, and was a broken bone here, a broken bone there. Minzetvas amenshiz. A man, a human, agonist. Go to Natana Tekev and see the description there, and that's life. And it hurts, because some of the people I knew, I mean, if you would know who the Rav was and what he knew, and Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Lubavitcher Rebbe, Teixeira, as I told you, I saw him on his deathbed because of my connection with Beth Israel and Dr. Kabakow. And I told you he was kept alive longer than he should have been alive. It was just artificial, but they were worried about mass suicide. They were meeting with any from psychologists, psychiatrists. They held a number of meetings, the police department. It'd be interesting if someone ever wrote a memoir of this period. And were you there? Were you invited?
They hired me. I worked that summer right after the Rebbe was Nifter, and because I was working nearby in Camp Hess, so Gan Yisrael, the Lubavitch camp, is like a 5-minute walk
right
from there, and I had a number of group sessions with people there.
Okay.
I was hired as part of that program.
But so you know what I'm talking about. I had students who were called into these meetings, and the worst did not happen, meaning when the Rebbe died, instead of mass suicide, there was to a certain degree foolishness. I don't can't use another word. People were drinking l'chaim. They had prepared themselves. There was an higher world, a different world, a better world. He's closer to us now. He can do more for us now. And that, of course, began the night that the Rebbe's death, the news was broken to everyone. That's the night, of course, that messianicism was born. Now, let's raise a serious question. A man dies, he's gone. Can he be Mashiach? And here you have an open Gemara. This is the heart of this part of the Messianic issue. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sadichet Amid Bet. And as you know, this is Perik Chelet, the 11th chapter of Sanhedrin. As I said, I learned Sanhedrin with the Rav, but the Chidushim were published from Sanhedrin, if you're familiar with the OU publication. So you'll notice in the introduction, they cite me because there's one Perik in Sanhedrin where whatever the reason is, I'm the only one whose notes survive. I don't know how it can be, but I'm the only one. I mean, Reb Heschel took notes. I don't recall Reb Aaron taking notes, but he took it all in his mind. But Reb Heschel took notes. But for whatever reasons, my notes, I gave all my notes. They were put in a computerized program on whatever notes I had from the Rav all the years I learned with him. But unfortunately, we never learned Chelek. We never got to Perek Yud Aleph. I look back now, what a experience that would have been had we been able to learn Chelek with the Rav. And here the Gemara is dealing with Mashiach and talking about Mashiach. And who can be Mashiach? Who has those attributes? Who's an example for us? And you all know when you go to school, people will hold up to you that this is a Rosh Yeshiva. You know, you hear it right in class. I heard it 2 minutes ago from me. Reb Moshe, the Rav, Reb Aaron Cutler. Who can be Mashiach? So the Gemara says, Omar Rav, I min chayahu kugon Rabbeinu HaKadosh. I min meitya hu Kegon Daniel Ish Hamudat. And translate the Gemara, simple translation. If it's someone among the living, it has to be like Rabbeinu HaKadosh. If it's someone among the dead, it has to be like Daniel Ish Hamudat. Now you all know Sefer Daniel. You all know who Daniel was, the greatness of Daniel, the Mesirat Nefesh of Daniel, the Shmirat Mitzvot of Daniel under difficult circumstances. But what does this mean? If he's alive, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. If he's dead, Daniel Ish Chamudat. Look into, what's your problem, Yomo?
Simple meaning is that you're just trying to find the...
Look at what Rashi says.
The example of someone who could be Mashiach. It's just there's some people who are living now and some people who already passed on. They could be exemplify who Mashiach...
So you look into Rashi, and there are two Perushim in Rashi. Do we take it literally, or do we take it figuratively? This is... Perhaps in modern times, in the year 2017, where we are today, there is no more important Rashi than this Rashi. And I'll read the Rashi to you in a second, but I believe I can summarize the Rashi. Does it mean literally or figuratively? If it means literally, it means that Mashiach can either come from the living or the dead. If it means figuratively, it's like Yomo said, this is an example. Who can be Mashiach? So a Litvak will say, someone like the Vilna Gaon. All right. Doesn't mean the Vilna Gaon. It means someone like the Vilna Gaon. A Chassid will say, someone like the Baal Shem Tov. Rashi has both interpretations and does not take sides. In Mashiach me'otan shechayim achshav vaday haynu Rabbeinu HaKodesh. Rabbeinu HaKodesh. The sovel tachluim. He suffered in life. He was ill. For chasu gamohu. And he quotes the Gemara in Bab Mitzia. V'yim chayam e'otin shemetu kva haya Daniel ish chamudot shenidon b'yisurim b'guv ha'yarot v'chasid gomachu v'hay kegon lav dafka. All right? One Pirush. Lashon Acher, Kagon. It doesn't mean really these people. See, this first Perish means it's really Rabbeinu HaKodesh. It's really Daniel Ish Chamudot. These people suffered immensely. And it doesn't mean Kagon. That reading is not there in the Gemara. Lashon Acher. Kagon Rabbeinu HaKodesh. Kloma, im yesh dugmato b'chayim haina Rabbeinu HaKodesh, v'yim dugma hula meitim, hainu kagon Daniel ish chamudad. Okay, kagon, a very important word. Is it in the text? Isn't it in the text? Rashi had two variant readings. Now, if you notice, Yomo, Yosef Chaim, a Litvak, born in the Ukraine but knew very little about Yiddishkeit at that point, comes to America, gets chopped up in Mora, goes to Be'er HaGola, and from Be'er HaGola winds up in Camp Morasha, and in Camp Morasha he winds up in the Kollel, headed by Reb Mordechai Willick. Am I correct? He heads it. Who headed it in your time?
There were three parts.
But he
one
played...
One of them was Reb Willick.
Baruch Hashem.
I wasn't part that was...
Reb Mordechai Willick, Litvak, par excellence. Don't tell me what. And my wife comes from the Bells family. Look at her husband, a disgrace for Bells, a pure Litvak, with a little influence from the German school and Rav Kook school. Who else were the Rosh Kollel? No, give me the name.
Rabbi
Yitzchak Cohen. Pure Litvak.
And Rabbi Ari Jacobson, who's from...
Jacobson, I don't know.
Semi Chabadnik, who's the Alter Rebbe.
The Alter Rebbe, Baruch Hashem.
But he learned in YU and the Kol Elyon. He was very influenced by
the very influenced by the Litvakin.
Right.
Gentlemen, Yomo is sitting here absolutely convinced that the proper pshat in Rashi is kagon. Take the basic context of the Gemara. Take the Dukta Kesofrim. This is most Gemaras, most manuscripts. Yomo's willing to go into the Vatican and do research on ancient manuscripts that they'll release to him because he is convinced, cut it out, it means kagon, like the living, this one. If like the dead, this one. But Mashiach has to be alive here and now. There's only one problem. And we have arrived. I'm showing you a source, a letter. This letter appears, but I knew all about it. It's probably on the website, the internet. There's a photograph of the letter. The name of the volume is Shemin Sason Mechavarecha, authored by Shalom Dovber HaLevi Wolpe. Krach Gimel, the third volume, page 200. Who is Rabbi Wolpe? Rabbi Wolpe is one of the famous messianists in Israel. In addition to being a messianist, he's a Talmud Chacham, and he knows Chabad literature backwards and forwards. When the messianic movement began, there was this tremendous feeling that the Rebbe is isolated. The other Gedolei Yisrael don't talk to him, don't deal with him. He's pushed himself in a corner, all the story of messianism. Where do we go from here? Rabbi Wolpe put out a four-volume series, arranged alphabetically, of Gedolei Yisrael and their relationship with the Rebbe. Shemin Sason Mechavar Recha. And in volume 3, he has endless pages on the Rebbe's relationship with the Soloveitchik family. He deals with Reb Chaim, he deals with Reb Moshe, he deals with Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, and he deals with Reb Baron Soloveitchik. Giddy, I'm going to reveal all the facts. Okay. Rabban Soloveitchik was a lovable individual, approachable. Rabbaran, if you knew Rabbaran Soloveitchik, I told David Miller, I told Rab David the other day, he was self-made in America. You got to give him all the credits. Not like the Rav who grew up in Europe where his father sat with him, but Menuchat HaNefesh, and taught him all of Reb Chaim. Reb Aaron came to America at the age of 13, started Talmudical Academy, studied with his father in Shir, went to Yeshiva Kadesh, studied with his father in Shir. His knowledge of Rishonim, his knowledge of Shas, this was all self-made in the United States. Then Reb Aaron went to law school, got a law degree, supported himself by being a Rebbe in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. He was very close to Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, at a period in his life, was very close to the Soloveitchik family. And when Reb Moshe went to America in December 1929 and finally got the visa to the United States, he had left his family in Warsaw and he left the young Reb Aaron in Warsaw. The Rav already was in Berlin. The sisters, Reb Shmuel already was more interested in chemistry than learning, but Reb Aaron was a youngster. He hired Reb Yitzchak Kuttner to teach Reb Aaron and prepare him for his bar mitzvah and take care of him, be the father figure for him. And Reb Yitzchak Kuttner returned the favor, hiring Reb Aaron Soloveitchik to join the Chaim Berlin faculty along with Vic Snow's uncle, the well-known Rabbi Snow.
What year about?
He joined the faculty. It has to be, 1940. has to be in the mid-40s after World War II, joined the faculty. It can probably be checked out on Wikipedia, I would imagine. There's an entry in Rabbi, must be an entry in Rabbaran Soloveitchik. Now, Rabbaran was very inanimate of Chabad. What the Rebbe and Rabbaran had in consonance, leaving out the family relationship that the family grew up in Chaslavich, Rabbaran wasn't born yet, but Rabbaran knew about Chaslavich, knew about Tanya, knew about Chabad. There was interaction before in the family. Reb Chaim Briska was not anti-Chabad. That much we know for sure. He actually gave smicha to very few people, among them the Rebbe's father. So you don't give smicha to a schnirsen if you're anti-Chabad and all that goes with it. So Rabbaran had a very, very positive relationship, but there's something much deeper. Does anyone predict what I'm about to say? If you knew Rabbaran, you knew the Rebbe, they were both uncompromising. These individuals took on America, but the guideposts, the lampposts, the goalposts were never compromised. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, I mean, here you have an example, a man who could reach out to hundreds of thousands, and he dealt with people who were Machalo Shabbos. But the firmness, Yikov Hadin et Tahar. There was no modern orthodoxy here, using modern in quotes. Rabban Soloveitchik was like that. Unfortunately, that led to a lot of his Akmas Nefesh in Chicago. And Stan, had his personality been a little different, maybe he would have survived Chicago. Chicago turned into a nightmare because the Balabatim ruled that they had their own concepts and money Iba Alis. Like the Rebbe. You couldn't buy the Rebbe. You couldn't buy Rabbaran Soloveitchik. I don't know. Other Rashi Yeshiva might say, look, the guy's giving $5 million. It's going to save the yeshiva. Well, let's look aside. I don't know. There's two sides to the coin. The Rebbe and Rabbaran could not be bought. So, Rabbaran was close. I'll tell you, he suffered. Books have just been published by his son, Rabbaran's son. If it ever hits the mainstream, it will cause an explosion. You see, Rabbaran left Skokie. Couldn't go on there. Traditional synagogues, no mechitza. They sold those forces that controlled Skokie, sold the Mizrahi Center to a Buddhist temple or something like it against Rabbaran's psak. He founded Brisk. You should know that the Litvisha world came down so hard on Rabbaran. What do you mean? Founded Brisk. Brisk in Yerushalayim is worried it'll cut into their fundraising. People will think Brisk is now in Chicago. Rabbaran said, it's Brisk Chicago. That's Brisk Yerushalayim. I'm also a Soloveitchik. I have a right. There were very acrimonious moments with Rosh Yeshiva from Tells, called Rabbaran, yelled at him, shouted at him. And Rabbaran put down the phone, and a half hour later, he had the stroke that incapacitated him for approximately two full decades or more. And yet this man, in pain, in a wheelchair, he went to visit Jonathan Pollard, the American government. I don't want to say bad words about America, but boy, am I glad I'm not living there. I would choose, if I had to, Mr. Putin, you're my role model for democracy. Rabbaran, they wouldn't let him be wheeled in a wheelchair. They wouldn't let him take a walker. They're worried that bombs, metal bombs. Like he had to walk on his own, supported by... it's beyond words how stupid human beings can be when he visited Jonathan Pollard. But see, that was Rabbaran. There was a streak of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in him. The Avad Yisrael. Gentlemen, I was at the Rebbe's funeral. They did the funeral very, very quickly. The reason they did the funeral very quickly is they were worried scenes of massive mourning What happened was they had the Rebbe in one house on Eastern Parkway. All the Balabatim who gave $1 million or more a year to the Rebbe were in that room. That's where they said some words of Hesped on the Rebbe. It's very hard. How can it be Masped the Rebbe? He was bigger than 100,000 Jews put together. You have to understand this. I mean, but they said, a friend of mine was in that room, I know. Then they wheeled out quickly. Well, it was very interesting. His Bekesha was on top of the coffin. So I asked my friend, why was the Bekesha on top? He said, because the sixth Rebbe was buried that way. They had the Rebbe ready for burial, and then says, oh, and remember, this is Bekesha, to bury it with him, like they bury Sfarim with the Gadol, the Sfarim he wrote. So they wheeled it quickly, and they raced away to Springfield Avenue.
Why did they put the Bekesha there?
Represented royalty. Like this was the Rebbe, this was his Bekesha, this is royalty, like a king. You bury with his face, his golden garment, let's say. So they put it on top of the, it was interesting, it was on top of the coffin. I think there was a talis and the Bekesha on top, as I recall. So they raced away, and of course, tens of thousands were there, we turned away, and as I turned away, a cab is arriving, and there's Rabbi Aaron coming to the funeral, okay, in the cab. So I spoke with him, and it was a moment in time. No, can you have a Mashiach from the dead? I'm ending off the class. There it is. Look it up. I am positive this has to be online. Tammuz 75756, June 24th, 1996. In response to many inquiries about my position on the Lubavitch movement vis-a-vis its messianic beliefs, before the passing of the Rebbe, Yitzchak, are you sitting?
Who is this?
Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, who am I talking about? Before the passing of the Rebbe, I included myself among those who believed that the Rebbe was worthy of being the Mashiach. I strongly believe that had we, particularly the Orthodox community, been united, we would have been merited to see the complete redemption. It's a very interesting statement. And you see Rabbi Aaron suffered. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik suffered. Wayu in Cherem. Skoki is in Cherem. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik now is in Cherem with the Charedim, because he's brisk yeshiva. No matter where you turn, I don't have to tell you what goes on today. That Rakefin is complimented that he can teach viewpoints he doesn't agree with. Imagine a lady, he spoke an hour and a half about, and he didn't criticize him. I said, who the heck? How do you have a hobby, Amina? All right, do you want me to stay in public? I told her, I argued with Rabbi Aaron about Bnei Akiva. I'm proud to say it. A little kid, I had the chutzpah, the guts, and Rabbi Aaron, but das ist noch nicht die richtige Hashkafa. It's not yet the totally right Hashkafa. You follow me, Josh? My theory, had Rabbi Aaron come to Palestine instead of America, he would be in a different camp. The whole family of his father-in-law, it comes all the way down to Haaretzion, Rabbi Yehuda Amiatal. You understand? So he might have gone along with the crowd here. But this is our nature. Gafni in the Knesset just stated yesterday that the Haredi parties pick the biggest idiots to go to the Knesset. He's talking about himself. You understand? What are you talking? But you see, they have to fight. Gentlemen, that which unites us is much more than that divides us. But no one listens, no one hears. Someone asked me about the Rav. I said, the Rav, you could have a long beard, you could not have it, you could dress any way you want. There are all types of Talmidim. All that mattered with the Rav, man can learn it, I'm a Kenish learn it. There was one guy who also a shtickle of Lakewood product, he knew how to learn. So the Rav told his father, I remember at the RCI, I know who he is, and I've based him today, so good, we've been in touch many times, with sources and whatnot. So he said to his father, it's a pleasure to talk with your son. He knows how to learn. So it's, the Rav didn't command over. He didn't go to college. He knows how to learn. All right, if you pierce the Rav a little deeper, if his concept was you have to go to college, you have to get a degree. There's the famous story of Yitzchak's cousin who was accepted to Lakewood and instead accepted to Harvard and instead he went to Lakewood, right or wrong. The Rav was very upset. But had your cousin turned into a tremendous Lamdan, as much as the Rav was upset, the Litvische goal in him would have overtaken him. But Reb Aaron suffered. So he says that Kol Zman the Rebbe was alive, I believe we could have seen the complete redemption. The Rebbe would have been Mashiach. Insofar as the belief held by many in Lubavitch, based in part on similar statements made by the Rebbe himself concerning his predecessor, the previous Rebbe, means the sixth Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Yitzchak, including prominent Rabbonim and Rashi Yeshiva, he's referring to those in Lubavitch, that the Rebbe can still be Mashiach. In light of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Rebbe Aaron Soloveitchik disagrees with Yomo Gachman. 100%. In light of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Zohar, Ababanel, Kisvei HaRiel, Shtei Chemed, and other sources. It cannot be dismissed as a belief that is outside the pale of orthodoxy. Any cynical attempt at utilizing a legitimate disagreement of interpretation concerning this matter to besmirch and to damage the Lubavitch movement that was and continues to be in the forefront of those who are battling the missionaries, assimilation, and indifference can only contribute to the regrettably discord, to the regrettable discord that already plagues the Jewish and particularly the Torah community. The Torah community should galvanize all its energies to unite in the true spirit of Eretz Yisrael, to battle the true enemies of Israel. I repudiate and called for an end to all efforts to discredit Lubavitch or any other legitimate movement within Torah Judaism. And there signed Aaron Soloveitchik. That is absolutely his signature.
Hold off.
Yes, and he believed that the Rebbe and the Tchiyat HaMetim, the Rebbe can be Mashiach. What's the problem? Yeah, well, what are we talking about?
Who will bring Tchiyat
HaMetim? The good Jews, by uniting and Avat Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu will declare, be ito achishenu, the time is come. He will rise and be Mashiach. That's the pshat. What do you think?
Who's going to rise him?
Hashem.
Hashem.
Yeah. Mechaya HaMeitim. What's your problem? You davened this morning?
I did.
Mechaya HaMeitim. But wait, I want to end off. Gentlemen, I must end off because the doctor ordered me to rest and I can rest today like a Chinaman can dance on the moon. I have an unveiling of my neighbor and I. God give strength. Gentlemen, this letter was published. All the information is in the source I gave you. This letter was published in the most widely read Jewish journal known as Jewish Press. Before they published it, they called Reb Aaron to check, did you really say that? Is that your signature? And Reb Aaron said, absolutely. I said it. I wrote it, and I signed it. Until today, there are people like Yomo who are the deniers and say Reb Aaron wasn't feeling well, it was the end of his life, he was in a wheelchair. But Yomo, when I want the facts, I'll give them to you. Don't confuse me with reality. When I want your opinion, the Rebbe will give it to you. Just show me the girl, and we'll take it further.
Did the other Soloveitchiks agree with Rav Aaron?
What are you joking? The other Soloveitchiks in Brisk? Okay. Well, one second, Alan. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
Gentlemen, this is a very interesting question. We're far from finished. Can the Rebbe still be Mashiach? The Messianist? 2 readings in Rashi, 2 readings in the Gemara, 2 manuscripts.
Kagon!
Literal or figurative? But one thing you see from here, can't out of hand dismiss the Messianists. This Gemara is powerful, Rav Aaron's letter is powerful. And I can understand Rav Aaron. I have to let it roll and see how it plays out. B'toach Hishenu, you know what Chazal say, Zachu or lo Zachu. But there are other sources. We have a lot more to say. Now, let me ask a simple question. By a show of hands, we make a commitment. Sunday, there is no class that is Yom Yerushalayim. Sunday night, there's a big dance. Everyone will be up all night. I want to be certain to have students. By a show of hands, who will be here next Monday morning at 9:05? That will be the final shiur for the year until the shiur in Beit Shemesh on kosher movies. And boy, the Rebbe's going to rub you hard in Beit Shemesh. I wouldn't laugh so easily. Abba Braunschweigel would have a hard time because part of it he'll understand very well and part of it, you know, how the world moved on in his world. Alan, what's troubling your blue mind?
I just want to say that after the Rebbe was Nifter, that summer I met Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in the Lubavitch camp, Gan Yisrael. There was a Yarche Kala.
Wow.
And because I was friendly with his nephew who was working with me. And I was sponsoring Yoredea,
right.
And this is after his stroke.
Right.
And I asked him an obscure question about a case of Tata Gavar with the Achbar.
Right, right, right.
And right off the top of his head, he gave me the answer as if the Yoredea and the Shach and the Taz on this obscure question were sitting right
in front of him.
And this is after his stroke.
Right, right.
The other thing I want to say, I don't know.
It might be that his bekiyut on that level was bigger than anyone else in his family. That's what I've heard from many. Rav Baron Lichtenstein worshipped the ground that Rav Baron walked on, and he considered Rav Baron a Rebbe Mufak, in addition to the Rav. And he also related to Rebbe Yitzchak Kutner, which is interesting.
The second thing is, sadly, won't be here for next week's share. I'm taking the plane today. But are you going to touch upon the Rambam Hilchos Melachim about Bar Kokhba being killed and therefore not a candidate to be Mashiach?
That I'm going to show the sources next week, but I spoke about that already.
Oh,
but
I'm going to touch
about the Rambam Hilchos Melachim much deeper than that. It's what you're saying is you're inferring it. I'm going to show you open halacha black and white.
No, he says it, but the Messianic Samadayek, he only couldn't be Mashiach because he was killed. But if you die naturally, you could be Mashiach. That's
a knapovot. I wouldn't.
I'm just saying what they say. I don't.
No. Say that. I'm going to bring Gil Student's book. You're familiar with that? His booklet against, and you'll see. Ultimately, I reach a very simple conclusion that anyone who says the Rebbe is Mashiach right now, it's what will be in the future. We have to let it roll. But to have the attitude that, you know, the Rebbe is here and right now and the wait at the grave, that's a little bit off the beaten path. Let it roll. We'll talk about it. There's a lot. I have more material I'll have to hold over to next year on what intelligent people say, Chabadnikim, non-Chabadnikim.
I
have a kuntras here of about, if I recall, 96 different sources where the Rebbe said he's not Mashiach. So, you know, you can make a very strong case against the Messianists, but halavai, they should just live normative Judaism and let it roll. Let's see what will be.
Also, I didn't want to interrupt earlier, but you mentioned Dr. Grach's magnum opus is Yeinom. That's actually not true. Yeinom is a relatively slim volume that deals only with the I spoke with him about this, by the way.
The one
that you're talking about is Hayayin Bimei HaBeinayim.
Correct. I accept that correction absolutely. I'm referring to the big volume.
Right, that's Hayayin Bimei HaBeinayim that covers it from every aspect, halakha, reality,
history, how to make a barrel to put wine in.
Exactly, but Yeinom is much more limited. No, it's a thin volume just on the halakha.
Totally familiar with it and absolutely stand corrected, and the wavelengths got mixed up. Yeinom is very easy to remember, but the other one's a big title. From what I understand, they're working on an English translation. Let's see what happens. Chaim is mellowed a little, so perhaps he'll let it go, because you can't do justice to the man. It's beyond words, his ability. He is the greatest Talmud Chacham to be raised in America. No one ever had a son like Reb Chaim. On the other hand, I don't have to tell you, he didn't become a Rosh. His father said, my father raised a Rosh Yeshiva, my grandfather raised a Rosh Yeshiva, my great-grandfather raised a Rosh Yeshiva, but I didn't succeed. Now, for a while, he did say Shem in the Yeshiva, but his demands were too great. You have to understand in life that students are not geniuses like the Rebbe.
But when the Rav wasn't well, he filled in for the Rav in 1982. In 1981, 82, that year, the Rav started this year, but after a few months had to stop, so he filled into it. And when he did the shear filling into the Rav, he was much, much mellower. So people asked him, why? So he says, because I'm a shomer for my father's shear. Right. And the shomer, I have to return it in the condition that I found it.
Right. That's beautiful. That's Chaim. I have to give him all the credit that he left here and went back to take care of his father, Kibbut Avieng. And no one else could do that because each sister had her own family and her own problems. And Chaim was not married, so he was able to jump back. And he deserves a lot of credit, the Kibbut Avieng, Chaim. Again, he suffered. He saw how much his father mellowed. It's on the Lonely Man of Faith. I think it's Aaron Adler who reveals how Chaim turns to Heschel. That's Heschel Schechter, Rav Heschel, and he says to him, since when does my father tolerate such stuyot in class? You understand? In the 70s, we're talking the 70s. When my days, if you said stuyot, I once said stuyot, the Rav called me a reform rabbi, I played it. The tape was found, and I played it right here in the collapse. And
you're a bad child?
I got upset with me. He said, what are you, a reform rabbi? I said something. It was in Sanhedrin. But I was more angry at the Rav. It's a compliment that he called me from Mitzchashev Bacha. But that my classmates laughed at me. Wise guys, you should have supported me. One time I set up shop and the Rav threw me down. And about a half hour later he said, no, what Donald said, Seklepsich. It makes sense. So you got to know you were dealing with, he could come in, the stories are famous, it's on the video too. He could come in a week later and say, I forget what I said last week. I think about it another time. And yes, now I can say differently. One time he was dealing with, there was a machlekes with the Chazon Ish, something in Seder Zrayim, it's written up by Brown. Many years later, the Rav said the Chazon Ish is pshat. So someone said to him, Rebbe, you differed 20 years ago and you wrote an article. He said, that's what I thought 20 years ago. Now I rethought. You understand? That's why he didn't publish in Halacha. That was the brisk perfectionism that they may always change their minds and find a better Svara. But philosophy, Ish Halacha, Mela, it's philosophy. It's not the same as Halacha. So there they were more liberal. Okay, I have to reiterate, I want to thank you all for coming, and I modela Kadosh Baruch Hu that I'm here in health. I want to thank the doctor, Dr. Dov Goldstein, for taking care of me last night. And I hope the Kadosh Baruch Hu will grant me many, many, many more years of health and ability to teach and a good heart and a happy heart and all that goes with life. We're dealing with a very delicate problem. It's Zalo Pashut, you know. Everyone thinks the Yitzchak said, how can the Rebbe rise? It's, you see, Rashi was a Litvak, according to the Rav at least. Rashi was very rational. And you see, one pshat in Rashi, one pshat kagon, but the other pshat, literal. So, nichye v'nireh. All right, so we did that today. We moved on beyond the stroke, beyond his death, and we're taking it further. I have a number. First of all, pass this back to Yitzchak. Secondly, Yitzchak, please come up front. Anyone else can come if they wish. I wish Jay were here. Yitzchak, who do you identify here? Look at this picture. It's a fabulous picture.
Oh,
that's not enough.
I think that's his daughter.
You got it. Okay. Gentlemen, we've now confirmed I was sent this to please identify. Make copies if you wish. Look, this is the everyone remember Shabbat al Salaki, whatever they called it. Remember the JNF planted trees, put your name on it. The tourists came to see the trees, disappeared, they put another name. Here is a little forest planted, Yaharab Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, a forest built by his friends and admirers in the United States of America. Who is standing there? I am 99.99% positive. This is his eldest son-in-law, Reb Yitzchak Tversky, later to become the Tolna Rebbe, and this is his daughter, Atara. And this picture, I have a feeling, I'm guessing, 1956, it's rewarding the Rav for his talk that year on Kol Dodi Dofei. So,
does this still exist? Or they,
no, what are you talking? They can't. Now, if anyone, again, I'm final time, I'm giving out sheets on the talk on the movie. If anyone's interested, I have two copies left here.
Yes, I'm here.
Whoever wants this, it's on Meet a Woman Who's Changing the Face of Orthodox Judaism, a Chabadniket. Unbelievable how capable the ladies are. Here's the Rebbe telling a chassid how to break a bad habit. Very fascinating, the Rebbe's insight. Here's a Rav, this is part of the Machloket over the Erev in Crown Heights. I'm totally opposed. This is very interesting. Pictures out of the past that my student Chaim Sensor has gotten off the internet. And this is Porat's inaugural event and their closing statement. And wow, we're going to have problems on our hands. I believe I've given everything out until we begin again next Monday in health and happiness. Das Vidanya.